All right, hello everybody, and happy Wednesday. It's good to see you all. I am going to start with a song. So a different take on an old rock classic. You like it? Yeah, I think I like the Dolly Parton version better now. It really touches my soul a little deeper. Of course, we have a lovely video that Lisa Hester had made of the song Stairway to Heaven with pictures of La Vida. I don't know if you guys have seen that. It's really gorgeous. Maybe sometime I'll play that for you. But it's not the Dolly Parton version. So we're here today for the Tao Te Ching, chapter 42, which is one of my favorite chapters. Did you have your hand up, Shauna? No, I must imagine that. She's talking to somebody. I thought I saw her hand up. All right, so I want to start with Derek Lynn. Tao produces one. One produces two. Two produces three. Three produce myriad things. Myriad things backed by yin and embraced by yang. Achieve harmony by integrating their energy. What the people dislike are alone, bereft, and unworthy. But the rulers call themselves with these terms. So with all things, appear to take loss but benefit, or receive benefit but lose. What the ancients taught, I will also teach. The violent one cannot have a natural death. I will use this as the principle of all teachings. I'm going to Wayne Dyer. The Tao gave birth to one. One gave birth to two. Two gave birth to three. And three begat the 10,000 things. The 10,000 things carry yin and embrace yang. They achieve harmony by combining these forces. People suffer at the thought of being without parents, without food, or without worth. Yet this is the very way that kings and lords once described themselves. For one gains by losing and loses by gaining. What others taught, I teach. The violent do not die a natural death. This is my fundamental teaching. I'm going to read just one more, I think, right now. I think I'll go to Stephen Mitchell, and then we'll dig in. I really like the Wayne Dyer one. We might read that one, concentrate on that one, but let's see what this one says. The Tao gives birth to one. One gives birth to two. Two gives birth to three. Three gives birth to all things. All things have their backs to the female and stand facing the male. When the male and the female combine, all things achieve harmony. Ordinary men hate solitude. The master makes use of it, embracing his aloneness, realizing he is one with the whole universe. Again, Stephen Mitchell's is a little different. So I'm going to go ahead and use Wayne Dyer's because I think his was the same as Derek Lynn's, but maybe just a little more clear English, so it'll be a little easier to work with. Now, we haven't looked at Victor Mayer's yet, but maybe we'll look at it after we look at this and see if there's anything different in his. One, the Tao gives birth to one. One gives birth to two. Two gives birth to three. Three gives birth to all things. That's four, right? Four steps. The Tao gives birth to one. One gives birth to two. Two gives birth to three. Three gives birth to all things. That's the four principles of God. The Tao gives birth to one. That's the saying that the first principle of God gives birth to the second principle of God, or what we could call the absolute, gives birth to consciousness. One, which is consciousness, gives birth to two. Oh, you know what? I think there's five things here. Let me start that over. One gives birth to two. I think there's five things. I think that's right. I think I remember there are five steps to this. So I can do this. But there are five steps instead of four steps in the Tao Te Ching. I remember saying that before, that the Tao has five principles instead of four. So let me break this back down for you. If anybody pays attention to when I teach the absolute, when I teach the first principle, I often call it life hyphen awareness, life awareness. And I say that's the first principle of God. If you go back and you listen to some older teachings, I used to break that out. I used to say there's life. Life gave birth to awareness. And awareness gave birth to consciousness. And then I said that consciousness created the world, but I didn't have the creative principle in there. So I still had four principles of God, but I didn't have the creative principle in there. And I'll tell you why I changed it. I changed it when I was developing Gentle Healing 1. I changed it to fit with the way the Course teaches it. I wanted an alignment there. So I hyphenated life awareness. I made it one, and I called that the first principle of God. I called consciousness the second principle of God. I put the creative principle in as the third principle of God, and then manifestation was the fourth principle. So I stuck with the four principles, but I rearranged them. I remember one non-dual teacher once told me I only needed three principles, the absolute, consciousness, and the world. So, of course, that one skips the creative principle too, right? The absolute, consciousness, and the world is all that you need. But the Tao has five, and I'll go over those five in just a moment. But the important thing about this is understanding that all of these are models. You know, I changed my model to fit Gentle Healing better. And if you go back and you listen to the very first Guiding Light teachings when I was teaching the Book of John, you're actually going to hear my original model of the four principles of God, which was life gives birth to awareness, awareness gives birth to consciousness, consciousness gives birth to all things. And that actually still works. But then, like I said, I changed the model to another model that works in order to be aligned with the Course in Miracles. What we're going to see here in the Tao is that the Tao, it's kind of like combining the two different models that I've used over the years and having five principles. So the Tao would be unmanifest life, completely unmanifest life. Pure potential. And the Tao gives birth to one, that would be awareness. But this awareness is not yet consciousness. It's not yet a subject. It's not yet a sense of self. So life gives birth to awareness, and then awareness gives birth to consciousness. Consciousness is the first sense of self, the first subject. And that creates then the possibility for an object. And then consciousness gives birth to the creative principle, which is the ability to create objects, right? And the creative principle gives birth to manifestation. So it has all five steps in there. So let me just, I'm going to write this into the room. So the Tao gives birth to one, which means pure, unmanifest life gives birth to awareness. Now again, this is pure awareness. without a sense of self. And those of you who have been listening to the Nisargadatta teachings, listening to the Bernadette Roberts teachings, you know they talk about waking up beyond consciousness to no sense of self. And then one, or awareness, gives birth to two. Sorry, not good at typing and talking at the same time. Which means awareness gives birth to consciousness. Now, if you think about this for just a moment, what we're looking at here is a natural process. You know, kind of like a seed grows into a little leafy plant that grows into a mighty tree, you know? Think about this logically for a moment. Doesn't it make sense that prior to having consciousness, which is awareness with a sense of self about it, that there might be a pure form of awareness without a sense of self? And doesn't it make sense that prior to a pure form of awareness without a sense of self, there might have been just pure and unmanifest life? If you look at this, what you can see is almost what I would call like a natural evolution of the divine, starting with the absolute source life, branching into awareness, but a pure awareness. Masters often liken this type of awareness to the type of awareness you have when you're in deep sleep. And it's kind of funny because when you're in deep sleep, most of us would say you're not aware of anything. And yet if I come over and slap you, you're going to wake right up. Why? Because there actually was an awareness there, right? If there was no awareness, I could beat the heck out of you and it wouldn't matter. So there is a type of awareness that is still not the subject-object awareness or not consciousness, right? So life, pure life, I'm going to use the word evolves for now, evolves into awareness, and awareness evolves into consciousness. Now, consciousness is now a subject, the first sense of self, a subject. For the first time ever, now that you have a subject, you have the potentiality for an object. So the next thing that happens is two gives birth to three, which means consciousness gives birth to the creative principle. Right? Consciousness, which is the first subject or the first sense of self, gives birth to a process that enables creation. Prior to a sense of self, there was no process for creation. You know, some people refer to consciousness as God. And in fact, I think we already looked at a Tao verse that says the Tao is before God, right? Consciousness is the birth of God. You now have God, which can create. Prior to consciousness, you didn't have that. And so now that you have God, which can create, the next thing that comes into being is a creative principle. And then three gives birth to all things, right? The creative principle then creates all things. Yeah, it makes perfect sense. And it also, if you really look at it, you can see the nature in it. It's a divine nature, but you can see the nature in it. You can see that pure, unmanifest life, the ultimate beginning, branched into an awareness, which branched into a consciousness, which branched into a creative principle, which branched into all things. You know, you can just see the nature in that, the divine nature. So we could have five principles of God, but like I said, what I did, I used to have life gives birth to awareness, awareness gives birth to consciousness, consciousness gives birth to all things. I didn't include the process of the creative principle in my original one because I perceived that as mechanical, rather than, for lack of better words, another stage of beingness. Right? I only went through the four stages of beingness. But then when I got to the Course broke it down, you know, differently. You know, Father, Son, making, it doesn't call it creation, making, and form. And so I reworked the model to match the Course, to be less confusing. But what's interesting is the Tao uses all five of those. And some teachers, as I mentioned, only use three. Form, consciousness, absolute. They're all just models. And each of the models can give the clarity. But it's sweet to look at this Tao version because the Tao version shows the entire evolutionary process of God. I don't know what else to call it. You know, I laugh when I say that because on the one hand, God doesn't evolve. God is changeless. You know, life, pure life is still pure life. It hasn't changed. And yet all of this has come out of it at the same time in what appears to be a very natural evolving type of process. So the Tao gave birth to one. One gave birth to two, two gave birth to three, and three begat the 10,000 things. The 10,000 things carry yin and embrace yang. That would be carry the feminine and embrace the masculine. Let's look at some other words that people use besides carry and embrace, because I think there are other words here. I think we should look at them. So instead of carry the feminine, Stephen Mitchell says has their backs to the female and stands facing the male, instead of carry and embrace. Derek Lynn says backed by the yin, backed by the feminine, and embracing the yang. And let's go ahead and look at Victor Mayer. He says, they bear yin, the feminine, on their backs, and they embrace yang in their bosoms. So it sounds like Stephen Mitchell this time actually did a pretty good translation. If we look at all of them, again, put it into simple language, when it says they have their backs to the female and they stand facing the male. So the question becomes, what the heck does this mean? You have your back to the female and you stand facing the male. Well, the female is the receiving nature. And the male is the giving nature. So what this is really saying is that the 10,000 things, whether they appear to be in their right mind or in their wrong mind, and I remember Ken Wapnick used to argue that even creatures were in their wrong mind, the way creatures went about attacking each other for food. And the Bible, maybe to a point, agrees to that, because the Bible talks about the day when the lion will lay down with the lamb, as if they are kind of in their wrong minds right now, right? And that someday the entire world will achieve a harmony. But what this is saying is, regardless of whether the creatures are in their right mind or whether they're in their wrong mind, they are receiving from the back, and then they are giving, pushing forward like a male through the front. What this really means is all things are moved by the Tao, or to use a language that you guys will be really familiar with since you're familiar with my teachings, all things are moved by the code, or all things are moved by the creative principle. So for example, you know, someone who's deep into spiritual teachings and really deep into attempting to be one with the Tao or one with the Holy Spirit might be paying close attention for what they feel as guidance and then following that guidance. You know, like we could use Regina Dawn Akers in receiving the guidance for the retreat house and then taking the steps necessary to bring that retreat house into manifestation because that was her guidance. And, you know, and everybody can see maybe how the Tao is involved in that. You know, the Tao is involved in giving Regina this vision, and then Regina follows through and does the thing she's asked to do in order to bring that into manifestation. But what this is saying is that process is always happening, even in if you're in your most wrong mind. You know, let's take the murderer, for example. That receiving may be the wrong mind of consciousness, or it may be the wrong mind of the creative principle, or the wrong mind of all of us, and it leads to the murder, but it's still the receiving and the going forth. You guys have probably heard before, we are not the doer. That's really what this is saying. We are not the doer. The creative principle is the doer, right? So all things have their back to the feminine. They receive from here, and then they're facing the masculine, their actions. That's why it's called facing. Their actions, then, their whatever they do comes from the receiving that already occurred. You know, so even when you're receiving thoughts, for example, I hate her. I hate her. I can't stand her. I'm not going to be around her anymore. That's it. I'm done with her. You're receiving. And then when you follow through by cutting her out of your life, right, you're following through with what you received. Completely wrong-minded. But you received it and you followed through. So let me go back to Stephen Mitchell here for a second. So all things have their backs to the female and stand facing the male. Now it says when male and female combine, all things achieve harmony. Let's see how the others word this. Yeah, they achieve harmony by combining. Let's see what Derek and Victor have to say. By integrating their energy. And by neutralizing these vapors, neutralizing these vapors. So imagine this if you do. Imagine first you're in your wrong mind and you're receiving thoughts, you know, I hate her, I can't stand her, she's so annoying, I don't want to be around her. But you bring these thoughts in and you practice rest, accept, and trust with them. What's happening when you bring these thoughts in and you practice rest, accept, and trust with them is that you are bringing them into the stillness, which Victor just called neutralizing the vapors, which I think is probably a pretty cool way of saying it. All the others are using the word combining the male and the female, and we'll get to that in a moment. But I really like the neutralizing the vapors of that wrong mind, right? But let's go into the combining. So I hate her. I hate her. I don't want to spend, you know, she's so annoying, blah, 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 blah. I bring that into the stillness. I rest, accept, and trust with it. And now instead of moving forward with the male on those actions, I see the emotions of those actions. I see the emotions of wanting to have nothing to do with her. I bring that back into the stillness too. And I rest there. With the male and the female combined in the stillness. And in this way, harmony will be achieved, or as Victor says, we neutralize the vapors. So one way to help you think about that, again, is you might think of the thoughts in this case as the receiving, and then the emotions, the feeling of, oh my God, I can't stand her, I don't want to be around her anymore, as the male already heading out. Right? You rest with the thoughts, you bring the male back in, you rest with the male, the emotions. You vaporize or neutralize those vapors, and you achieve harmony. Let's see, I was doing Wayne Dyer, wasn't I? Not Stephen Mitchell. Let's go back to Wayne Dyer. So the 10,000 things carry yin and embrace yang. They achieve harmony by combining these forces. Now, the next verse is where everybody kind of goes off in a different direction, so we may just have to look at everybody here. We have Wayne in our hands, so we'll start with Wayne. He says, people suffer at the thought of being without parents, without food, or without worth. And I think we could lengthen that. Now, you know, the Chinese have great respect for their elders, for their parents. Remember, this is a Chinese teaching. Americans, we still love our parents, but Americans might be more to say people suffered the thought of being without children. That might be more fitting to our culture. You know, we talked about last night, we talked about staying in awareness while dying. And I mentioned that for me, and I'm guessing this is true for most everybody that has children, for me, it's the idea of staying in awareness while I'm dying seems more doable or easier than the idea of staying in awareness while my child is dying. I could see more temptation to suffer while my child is dying, right? So we might reword this for our culture: people suffer at the thought of being without children. Without food, we might, in our culture, say without money. And without worth. I think that fits in our culture too. Right? And it's very true. I mean, don't people suffer at the thought of being without children, without money, and without worth? So that's just a statement of the human psyche. And he says, yet, this is the very way that kings and lords once described themselves. By kings and lords here, he's referring to ancient masters. And you know, Jesus in the Bible talks about leaving your fields, which would be like leaving your money, leaving your parents, right, to follow him. So he says that the ancient masters, or the kings and the lords, once described themselves as people without parents, and we could include people without children. People without food, we could include people without money. And this is a very Chinese way of thinking, people without worth, which means they didn't need anything from you to honor them or build them up, right? Like, I don't need you to tell me I'm a great teacher or a kind and loving or generous person or anything like that. You can see me as worthless. I don't have a need for that. So this is really saying that people suffer at the thought of not having their attachments, whatever those attachments are. And yet this is exactly how the great kings and lords describe themselves, as having no attachments. And then it says, for one gains by losing and loses by gaining, which is pretty easy to understand, right? You gain eternal life, self-realization, truth realization, by losing your attachments. You lose eternal life, self-realization, truth realization, by gaining attachments. And then he says, what others taught, I teach. You know, I'm teaching the same thing these ancient kings and lords or these ancient masters taught. my teaching is no different. The other day, somebody wrote me an email and asked, she referred to A Course in Miracles as a New Age teaching. And I don't know if doubt was rising in her mind or if doubt was in a friend's mind or where the question came about, but she talked about someone who had embraced the course, studied the course for a while, and then at some point decided the course was a false teaching and returned to Christianity. And this person wanted my thoughts about New Age teachings like the course as compared to Christianity. So I answered the question. First, I'll tell her the first part of my answer, which isn't related to the doubt, but I'll just share the entire answer. I told her about how when I was writing NTI, you know, I wrote NTI starting at the very beginning of the New Testament and going to the end. So I didn't know what was coming next. I don't know that I'd read the entire New Testament from beginning to end before. If I had, it'd been many years previous and I had forgotten. So, you know, I'm reading from the beginning all the way to the end. I'm hearing this interpretation. I'm writing it down. I do this for 13 and a half months. I get to the very, very, very end of the Bible. Literally, the end of Revelation chapter 22. And basically it says there that anyone who changes even one word of the scroll or adds to even one word of the scroll or subtracts from even one word of the scroll will suffer all of the sufferings promised in the book of Revelation. I just finished the whole damn thing. I mean, it's like, why didn't somebody tell me this before I started? You know, and there was, you know, the way I remember it, there was some fear, there was some doubt, there was some question for a moment. And then what came in was the interpretation. And the interpretation said basically to follow the voice of love. And that settled everything for me right then, and there's never been a question again. You know, I had this threatening voice of the Bible or this inner voice, and I was asked to follow the voice of love. It was easy to tell which was which. So that was the end of that for me. I never went back and questioned my upbringing of Christian teachings again. I never went back and questioned, were those more judgmental teachings with the promise of punishment, you know, were those real? It settled it forever. So that's the first thing I told her. But then the second thing I told her, which goes back to what we're talking about here, she had called A Course in Miracles a New Age teaching, and she had asked me to comment on New Age teachings versus Christianity. And so the other thing I told her was that the Course is not a New Age teaching. I said, New Age teachings are literally teachings that teach you how to manifest in the world. I said, that's not really what the Course is about. And I said, in fact, the Course is a very ancient teaching in a new form. The Course is the exact same teaching as the Bhagavad Gita. The Course is the exact same teaching as the Tao Te Ching. The Course is the exact same teaching as Buddha. These teachings have been around forever. And as far as we know, the Tao is the oldest. Some people say the Tao goes back 5,000 years. So as far as we know, it's the oldest. And in the Tao, our oldest written teaching of the truth, in the Tao, he talks about the ancient masters. Which means there's no way you could call the Course New Age because it's the teaching that's been here so long. We don't have records of the earliest teaching of it. The Course is merely a new form of an ancient teaching. And that's what he's saying right now, right here. He says what others taught, right? Those who came before me, before Lao Tzu, what others taught, I teach. I teach the same thing they taught. If you're going to be attached to the things of this world, you're going to lose. And if you lose your attachments, you're going to win eternal life. another thing that's pretty amazing about the 42nd verse is if you look at it very carefully, Jesus taught everything that's in here. And Jesus came thousands of years after the Tao. And I'm sure never read the Tao. Right? This is the teaching that comes from within. Anyone who has gone within seeking truth since the beginning of time has received this same truth. And what that says to me then is we are fools if we choose to ignore it. We're fools if we choose to ignore the ancient wisdom that has been communicated to every master of every time from every religious background who has ever gone within and asked for wisdom. People suffer at the thought of being without parents, without food, or without worth. Yet, this is the very way that kings and lords once described themselves. For one gains by losing and loses by gaining. What others taught, I teach. Nothing new here, Lao Tzu says. And then he goes on to say one more thing that Jesus said thousands of years later. The violent do not die a natural death. This is my fundamental teaching. It's interesting to contemplate what deeper meaning there may be in those two lines. The violent do not die a natural death. This is my fundamental teaching. Now, Jesus said, those who live by the sword shall die by the sword, right? But I don't know about you guys. I've never shot anyone. I came very close to stabbing someone once, but I stopped. I didn't do it. I had the knife in my hand. I was right there, but then I stopped.
Is that true?
That is true, yes.
You?
Yes, for real. Who's saying that?
I am, Sharon.
Oh, Sharon. Yeah. That was Ron.
God, I wish I knew you before all this.
That was very true. I was right up there, just like right up there with a butcher knife in my hand.
No wonder all that stuff, because I thought, oh, well, Virginia now doesn't have as much self-hatred as me.
yeah, that's a lie. I did. But I know I did.
I just want to throw in one question. If there's one being doing all this, one being, really, even though we appear to be separate, then they're living through us, right? So we're going to be perfectly guided no matter what. Even the people that... It's a question, Regina, because
yeah,
I know
no, no. Well, yeah, that's what the Tao said. The Tao said, in effect, that regardless of whether it's the wrong mind or the right mind, you're always guided. There is no such thing as independence.
No.
However, you do have the choice. This is where the free will comes in. You do have the choice to choose the right mind over the wrong mind, or the wrong mind over the right mind.
But even that could be an illusion I've read. Even that, I mean, I don't know that. That's just something I've read.
Yeah, my experience is right now, and of course, maybe when I wake up more, I'll come back and tell you something different. But my experience is right now that I do have that choice. You know,
right, that's what you do. You where you live is where you talk, right?
Yeah. My experience now is I can, you know, maybe feel those wrong-minded energies come and moving through me, and I do just what the Tao talked about. I bring them into the stillness through rest, accept, and trust, and neutralize those vapors. Right? Mm-hmm. That's my experience. And it feels like I could have just let them go and acted then from the wrong mind. And right now, because that's the way it feels, I would really hesitate greatly before I ever told anyone that they didn't have a choice there, because I think that would possibly lead some people to use it as an excuse to just act from their wrong mind when they didn't have to, when they did have a choice.
Right. I appreciate this. Yeah. Because I myself don't live from that. I love to read. So I've read so many things, and some of the higher teachings say that it's just illusion. Everything is. So.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure that's true too. I'm absolutely sure that the entire thing is an illusion. Even the awakening process is an illusion. I don't doubt that. That's also true, Sharon, because the ultimate aspect, which is always awake, the absolute, isn't experiencing any of this. So that is also true. But, you know, I think we have to live from where our consciousness is. And again, the teaching that I've always received and the experience that I've always had is that in every moment, I at least have two choices. Sometimes it feels like more, but I at least have two choices in every moment. Mm-hmm. And my job is to always pick the highest choice. So let me get back to where I was. So the violent do not die a natural death. This is my fundamental teaching. So what I was saying is that I'm hearing just another interpretation this. I was joking. I mean, it's telling the truth. I was joking about how I've never stabbed anyone. I came close once, but I didn't do it. But what I was leading up to is, in that way, you could say, I'm not a violent person. I've never even doubled up my fist and hit anyone in my lifetime. So does this mean that I get now to die a natural death? I think there's a deeper meaning to the word violence, and I think there's a deeper meaning to the word natural. I distinctly remember when I was around 15 years old wishing my stepmother would die. You know, and meaning it. Fortunately, she didn't, because I like her now. But I distinctly remember wishing she'd die. So in that way, I have been violent. More times than I could possibly ever remember in this lifetime, I have been violent. I finally made the choice, we're back to choice, to not be violent anymore, not even in thought, not be violent in any way. And so in this way, I have laid down my sword. I've laid down my butcher knife, right? The natural death, then, is not the physical death. The physical death is an unnatural death. The natural death is the death of the ego. So those who are violent will not experience the natural death. You live by the wrong mind. You're attached to the body as me. And in that way, you die. But the one who lays down their sword, the one who lays down the violence, the one who practices the teachings of the Tao to the best of their ability, with the fullness of their heart, they're the ones who are destined to die the natural death, the ego death. So I think that is the deeper meaning of the teaching.
You know, but Byron Katie, I mean, she actually woke up after the hell she went through, right?
Yes.
That's fluky, but she did it.
Well, and it's interesting. Now, again, I'm not a Byron Katie expert, but what I remember from reading the only book of hers I ever read, so it's my only... My limited expertise on Byron Katie is A Thousand Names for Joy. But what I read in A Thousand Names for Joy was that after she woke up, she still had to go through a purification, and she used the work to do it. So it's almost like she had an awakening, but still had to lay down her sword.
Yeah.
It just happened in a different order for her.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So, you're welcome. And in fact, I was just reading in the Seven Steps this morning. Let me see. I probably have the seven steps right here. I hope I did. Last week when I came to La Vida, I forgot the seven steps. So when I got home, I had to catch up on like 3 days of contemplation. Yes, I brought it this time. I probably should get two and leave one here so that doesn't happen. So where were we this morning? Around the 1111s. I don't know if I can remember. Does anybody know what the contemplation quotes were for this morning? The seven steps? Of course, it could have been my own because I also contemplated my own. So where was I this morning? I'm in the 1-4s. Right along here, let's see if it was mine. Yes, it was mine, 1415. So this is the quote I read this morning from The Seven Steps to Awakening. Knowing his true indivisible nature by his own realization. So we're talking about somebody who's awake, right? Knowing his true indivisible nature by his own realization, the perfected man should remain in full possession of himself, free from imaginations within. Someone who already knows their true indivisible nature through their own direct experience, their own realization, and is here being called a perfected man, is still being guided to remain in full possession of his awakening by being free from the imaginations within. So what this says to me, and I don't know at what point, and I'm sure there is some point based on Ramana Maharshi's teachings where the last thought of the ego gives way. Maybe that's when you awaken to the absolute. I don't know the answers. But what this is saying, and it's talking to an awakened or a realized person, what this is saying is you still need to be careful not to buy into an ego thought. Isn't that interesting? So we need to continue that harmonizing process. You know, and I have known people, I don't know if they were awake or near awake, I can't say, but they were people that I looked up to as highly enlightened teachers who appear to have fallen backwards. So I'm very aware of this ability to continue to receive from the wrong mind, even after you have reached some heights. I don't know if there's a height beyond where this no longer happens, but I do know that you can reach some heights and a wrong mind can be received in from the back and you can allow it to move through and become your forward action. And when you do that, it seems like then you get to receive more of, it's like the vibrational thing. Then you begin to lower back down into vibration, right? So I don't know at this time, and again, I can't speak for a level of awakening that has not been reached, but I don't know at this time that I would recommend ever feeling like you're beyond the need for discernment. The day that you think you're beyond the need for discernment could be the day that you begin the climb back down again. So let's just see. I think we only have a couple minutes, but I think Stephen Mitchell ended this a little differently. He said, ordinary men hate solitude, but the master makes use of it. Embracing his aloneness, realizing he is one with the whole universe. At some point, I feel, and again, I could be wrong about this. I really could be wrong about this. But at some point, I feel all of us need some extended solitude. If we stay outward involved in a busy life, then we are, at least to some degree, always in the ego's clutches. In order to really go in and examine our false beliefs, in order to really go in and get in touch with that strong desire for truth that's going to pull us to the end of me. We need some solitude. And in fact, I will just say this again, this was the core of the guidance for the retreat house. And the retreat house hasn't been used for this a lot yet. I hope that it still will be. People come to the retreat house for the retreats, and I think the retreats have been very valuable. Do not get me wrong. And I think everybody who's come would say the same thing. But when I originally felt that guidance, the core of what I felt was a place for people to go to be in solitude. And this is why I talked last week about how the retreat house is not meant to become a community center. It's meant to be a place where people can go to get away from the social interactions, to get away from work, to go deeply within and genuinely take their next step with God. So those of us who are the leaders or the managers of the retreat house, it's our duty to make sure that the retreat house maintains that environment even while you guys aren't there doing that. We have to keep the retreat house sacred. And what I hope is that one day you will come when there's not a retreat, just you with you. Get away from your daily life. Get away from whatever distracts you and go deep, deep, deep within. I'll just close again with Stephen Mitchell's ending to this. Ordinary men hate solitude, but the master makes use of it. Embracing his aloneness, realizing he is one with the whole universe. Thank you very much, everyone. Bye.